There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
We've had an interesting debate over our next guest before he even came in the studio this morning, Richard Dean and myself, arguing over what age he had retired, which isn't the sort of argument we have over most of our guests. It must be fair. What we have found out about him is this. He retired at the age of 44. But what had he done by the age of 36, Richard?
He is a teacher who became a self-made millionaire by the age of 36, but chose not to retire because he enjoyed teaching so much.
As you do. This is one worth listening to this morning, and we'd love to get your thoughts and questions as well. 4001. We're speaking now to a man who spends his time travelling around the world helping expatriates to figure out how best to invest their money and how to avoid investment schemes that benefit the people selling them rather than those buying into them. Andrew Hallam is the best-selling author of Millionaire Teacher, as well as the Global Expatriates Guide to Investing. Andrew, it's great to have you in this morning.
Thank you.
You have made a vocation out of helping expats, particularly teachers, not to get scalped, basically, by bad investment products. And you started out, as Richard just mentioned, there as a teacher yourself. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how your journey, how you ended up where you are now?
I was inspired by somebody I met when I was 19 years old. I met a mechanic who was very financially literate, obviously on a middle-class salary himself. And he said to me, if you become financially literate, which very few people are, you could end up retiring early or enjoying a really fine retirement if you invest your money properly and spend your money responsibly. So it was like a template for me. So at age 19, I started to invest, investing in the stock and bond markets. And compound interest, Albert Einstein says it's more powerful than the splitting of the atom. The younger you are when you start, the more powerful the results really are. And so you're right, by the age of 36, I'd noticed I've got $1 million US, and I'd paid for my own college expenses. Nobody ended up having given me any money, but it just worked out that the money compounded over time.
So talk to me about where you invested and how you made your investment decisions. You did this on your own.
Yeah, the key really is to keep costs as low as possible, not to speculate, so to diversify. And so I built a portfolio of low-cost, globally diversified index funds, or exchange-traded funds, as they're known. And so just continue to dollar-cost average, adding money into them every single month. And I lived well below my means. And so it's really interesting when I hear people say things like you need to be living on 80% of your current income when you actually retire. You hear all sorts of formulas that people toss out. And that kind of cookie cutter scenario doesn't work for everybody, because there are people that earn $1 million a year that live on $200,000 a year and that end up banking a vast majority of it. And then there are people that end up spending every penny that they make. So in terms of, you know, you need 70% of your current income in order to retire, those sorts of figures, I think, are quite cookie cutter and don't really fit for most people.
So tell us your story. You're working as a teacher, not earning a huge amount of money. Can you give us some detail about how much you're earning, the kind of salaries you're earning, your take-home pay, what percentage of that you were saving, and how it all started off?
Oh, I was crazy. Oh, in the beginning. I mean, if you're looking at somebody who retired or built a $1 million portfolio on a school teacher's salary, there's an extreme element to that. And so what I was doing was saving, in the beginning, more than 50% of my salary.
Earning what, $30,000 a year?
Yeah, when I started, I was earning about $36,000 a year. And obviously, over time, my salary ended up rising. But I did some pretty extreme things during that time period, too. So
because there's two elements to what you did. One is the saving bit, and save a bigger proportion of your income, which
right.
is great. And then there's the investing bit and how you invest. And I'm keen to kind of break those down. So the investing bit, honestly, I'm more interested in.
Okay.
And using cheap tracker funds rather than expensive managed funds. But the savings bit is important. So how did you do that? For example, $36,000 is what, in dirhams, I don't know, 10,000 dirhams a month, you're paying tax on that. How did you live? You still got to pay rent, you got to eat, bills for electricity and stuff like that. You know, no one's giving you food and water for nothing.
Yeah, are you asking me about some of the extreme things I did early on?
Yeah.
Because they were extreme. And so, I mean, yeah, that idea, this isn't a template for people to follow and say every school teacher can end up with $1 million at age 36. You've got to be a bit of a nut, which I was. So to give you an example, one of the things I did do is I did a lot of house sitting so I wouldn't have to pay rent. And so I would put a post, put an advertisement in the local newspaper saying that I was looking for people that were heading off to southern climes for the winter. And I was responsible. I was a teacher. I left out a few other adjectives, crazy, and said that that I would house sit for them. So I did that at one point. So I wasn't paying any rent. And then what I did a little bit later was I ended up finding a really low-cost place to live. But it ended up being 55 kilometers from where I was living. And I grew up as a bicycle racer, so it doesn't end up, this isn't as extreme as it may sound, but I ended up cycling 55 kilometers per day, each day to work.
Each way.
So that was a 110 kilometer round trip. And in part, you know, okay, there was one, it was crazy, and I wanted the lowest cost rent that I could find, which I ended up getting. And so there's the idea of that, you know, I didn't have the car, so I did have a car, but I wasn't spending money on fuel. And I was keeping fit in the process. And again, that's pretty extreme. It's not something that most people are going to do, but you'll find that outliers often end up going to extremes to achieve what their goals are.
So that was part of it, was saving an awful lot of money. But the second part, and perhaps the most important part of your thesis, is how you invest your money. And you think that teachers in particular, but people in general, are getting a raw deal from the investment industry and they should do something differently. So tell us about the raw deal people are getting and then tell us about what they should do.
Well, when I wrote my first book, I was looking at the investment industry in Canada and the United States. And I thought, It was quite unfair. I thought that the financial service companies took more than their share of the overall sort of pre-fee profits. But when I discovered what happened here in the UAE, I was absolutely floored. And I've been a financial journalist for a long time too, so about 17 years ago, I started writing for finance magazines, Money Sense magazine. I write a column for the Globe and Mail, which is Canada's national newspaper. So I write a finance column. So it's not like I'm completely unfamiliar with financial products. I'm very familiar with them. And then when I found out what happens here, I was utterly shocked to find investors paying annual fees of 4% per year on their contractual savings schemes. And there were cases, of course, where they're paying more than that for their first 18 months worth of contributions. They're paying fees as high as 9% or more per year on the money that they contribute for the first 18 months. They're incredibly complex platforms that many people don't understand, but their fees charged on so many different levels. There are those initial unit fees when you first start the contractual savings scheme plans. There are the platform costs, the annual fees with that, and then the mutual fund fees on top of that. So when you add these all together, you'll have the typical investor in Dubai, and I'll say typical because sadly I thought these things were going to be aberrations, like, oh, this unfortunate person just got into this really rotten product. But then I found, especially after coming here, that these are the norm. So I've been giving talks at schools throughout the UAE and throughout the Middle East and finding that, wait, these aren't the exception. These products that are virtually unheard of in other areas of the world where regulation is tighter are the norm here. And so to give you an idea of how damaging that is, let's assume that you're paying 4% per year. May I?
Go for it.
Let's assume you're paying 4% per year in fees. And let's assume that inflation runs 3% per year. But just to break even before fees, your investments have to make 7%. So before fees, if your investment makes 7%, fees remove 4%, that leaves you with 3%. Inflation hits you with an average of about 3%, you're left with no after inflation gain. So that's the first part of the tragedy here. But there is a second part,
We're speaking to Andrew Hallam. He's the best-selling author of Millionaire Teacher and The Global Expatriate's Guide to Investing. He's in the studio talking to us about how shocked he was when he first discovered some of the investment schemes that were being sold here in the Middle East. Andrew, thanks for staying with us.
Thank you.
And you've just been outlining why the fee structure that a lot of us have faced here doesn't work. But you said that there was a second reason that some investment products were taking people for a ride. What was that second reason?
Well, very few of the people that are selling these products here in the UAE, very few of them are certified financial planners or chartered financial planners. So, which is these are high designations that when you are certified, train you on portfolio construction. And so what I typically see with portfolios here in Dubai and in the UAE is I see very lopsided portfolios that have been created by commission-hungry salespeople just to make a sale. So I'll give you an example here. If you tell me when you started, and let's say you have one of these contractual savings schemes, and you give me the year you started, I can probably tell you what's in that portfolio of yours. And that sounds quite shocking, but if you started around the year 2007, there was a really strong run-up for the emerging markets prior to 2007. The few years previous were really strong. And so what a salesperson will do to impress you is we'll show you a variety of charts of funds that would be just emerging market funds that have done really well, and we'll say, look at these funds. They've been making 20% per year for the past 4 or 5 years. This is what we are going to do for you. And so they stuff portfolios with those funds, and now in doing so, you take extraordinary levels of risk because you're essentially buying yesterday's winners or chasing your own tail, but you have no diversification. So if it's concentrated in just one sector, such as emerging markets, and there's no bond element, there's no developed Europe, there's no the United States, when that element or when that sector does poorly, the entire portfolio ends up plunging along with it. So if the portfolio were constructed in 2010, 2011, somebody shows me their portfolio, I'll say, I'm going to guess you've got a lot of gold in there. So gold, precious metal funds, that kind of thing. And so there's an extraordinary level of high risk associated with most of these particular portfolios.
I've got your book, Andrew, and it's kind of divided, in my mind at least, into sort of two ways of thinking. Number one, it tells you how to find a decent financial advisor or person to work with, how to spot the good guys, basically. It also tells you how to go about doing it yourself if you're that way inclined. And we've had a couple of texts, and I'm going to choose the one that's come in from Fuad. And he says, I'd like to ask Mr. Hallam, as a non-US resident or citizen, what is the best way to invest in the low-cost funds that he's talking about, the Vanguard sort of things, if you're here in the Middle East or in Asia?
Well, you can open a discount brokerage account. So you could choose a brokerage, let's say Saxo Capital Markets. So you could open up an account with Saxo Capital Markets. Now, these aren't people that are going to hold your hand. This is like walking into a giant warehouse. And so you have to know, all right, I'm going to start with the basis of your portfolio would be a global stock market index. So you purchase a global stock market index that either trades on the UK exchange or the Canadian exchange. And essentially, when you're doing that, you're buying the entire world's market within one fund. So you've got diversification representing about 49 different countries and about 7,400 different stocks. And in doing so, that one fund itself over a period of 10 years plus will outperform 90% of professional investors.
Talk to me about doing it yourself, though, because I've sat with financial planners, financial advisors before, and I've mentioned the idea of doing it myself. And the caveats that they have often given me is that if I invest myself, this is what people have told me over the years, I won't rebalance correctly when the money starts coming in, so I'll end up being imbalanced and therefore exposed. They've also said that having an advisor will stop me from freaking out when stuff's going badly and pulling out at the wrong moment. Are those good enough reasons not to do it yourself?
They can be. The process is extraordinarily simple. If you're British, you can have a British stock market index, a global stock market index, and a bond market index for stability. And you could break them into thirds. But here's where it gets really tricky. When the global stock market index outperforms the UK index, what does a typical person want to do when they add fresh money?
Put it into the one that's doing well.
Exactly. And that's the opposite of what you really need to be doing. You need to maintain a constant allocation. So Warren Buffett says that investing is simple, but not easy. The psychological component is the difficult component. So the enemy we face in this case when we're doing it ourselves is the person we're looking at in the mirror. So that's the person that ends up speculating, getting afraid when markets drop. So typically when markets drop, and I say when, because markets always drop, that's what they'll do. They rise, they fall, they rise, they fall. They always end up eventually hitting new heights. But when markets drop, the idea is that you rebalance the portfolio. And you don't even have to wait until you see an actual drop. You just rebalance it once a year back to the original allocation. But after a particularly bad year, when the markets have fallen quite a bit, it's really psychologically hard for people to end up selling some of their bond component, which may have risen a little bit, and putting the proceeds into the stock component, which has dropped. So there's definite merit in having an advisor do this for you.
How do you spot a good one? And what is an acceptable level of fees to be paying?
A good advisor is one first to sit and ask what their philosophy is. You want them to ensure that they don't speculate. So a good advisor isn't going to say to you, you know, China is going to do really well this year. If somebody says that to you, China is going to do really well, we're going to start focusing your portfolio more on China. If someone's speculating, step away. We don't want to do that. Now, Warren Buffett says that stock market forecasters exist to make fortune tellers look good. Okay, we have all kinds of academic evidence suggesting that no one with any degree of consistency can predict what asset class or what market's going to do well in any given year or any given decade for that matter. So step away from speculators. Make sure they keep fees as low as possible. And so if it's a full service advisor, something like 1.2% per year, fee-based advisor is what you want, somebody who isn't paid on commissions, but is a partner with you in the process, somebody who will stay with you, help you set goals, not somebody who's just in for a quick commission and then they're out. So a fee-based advisor becomes a partner. If they charge 1.2%, I think that's a fairly reasonable rate.
We are going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we've got so many people texting with questions for you, suggesting that you should have a 2-hour special, is one of the texts we've just had from Maras. If people do want to hear more from you, though, you're going to be speaking tonight at Dubai College, aren't you? I'm going to be down there. You've got two sessions tonight, the first one at 7 p.m.
That's right. I'm going to be doing two things. And so they're two separate sessions. So if people choose to arrive at 7 o'clock, they can. Or if they want to arrive at 7:40, they can arrive just for the second session. The first session shows how much you should be saving for your retirement. Again, that's very individual, but I take you through a series of calculations to determine that. And the second is about smart, effective investing.
Fantastic. That's tonight at Dubai College. If you go to Andrew Hallam's blog, H-A-L-L-A-M, if you Google him, there's a link to register on the Facebook page. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.